From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For a ghost story to work, it has to have certain elements. Of course, it has to be told well, has to have a clincher at the end, and it should be true, or anyway, true enough. That is, ghosts are scary because they're alive, or were alive. For Kristen Clay, who runs a story tour company in Clearfield, Utah, the stories they were telling really took off when the storytellers came to know something about the ghosts. Once they became real, things changed.
And we've gotten to know the ghosts. They have their own personalities. They're their own characters. But they've become more alive for us.
The playwright Matthew Ivan Bennett took the tour, and it seemed real enough to him to base two radio plays on real Utah ghosts. Today in the program, we're offering an hour of live radio theater. It's our third annual Radio Hour, performed by the Plan B Theater Company. The show gets underway after this. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Think about the ghost stories you've heard in the past, the ones that really got to you, made you look over your shoulder at the end. They're scary because they're real, or anyway, based on real characters with a real backstory. If the storyteller can say, yeah, it happened not far from here, or she lived in that house, the one right there on the corner, it can give you the creeps. And even if you're a committed skeptic, come on, it was that house right there. And you never know. That's why the radio drama you'll hear today is particularly creepy, because they're based on the stories, two stories, of real live Utah ghosts. And honestly, they lived not far from here. Today in the program, the Plan B Theater Company players are with us once again for our third annual Radio Hour. This year, the plays Lavender and Exile, written by Plan B's resident playwright. We'll get to the show in just a moment, but first, we're joined by Matthew Ivan Bennett, as I said, the resident playwright for Plan B Theater Company, and he wrote today's pieces. And Matthew, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having us. Thanks for hosting us on your show.
Corey Thorell is with us. He's Plan B's company manager. He helped create the sound and the Foley design for this year's Radio Hour, as in years past. And Corey, welcome back.
Thanks, Doug.
All right, so let me start by asking, Matthew, so you were collecting stories, basically. You wanted to create a piece of radio drama, and so you wanted you wanted something real. You wanted a real story.
I wanted a real story, and I also wanted a story that would work for radio. As I began collecting Utah ghost stories, I found several that, while very compelling, were short. There is a story at the Rio Grande downtown about a ghost that visits the bathroom there. Somebody walks in and the faucet turns on by itself and it steams up the mirror and somebody runs out and, ooh, there was a ghost there. And you can't exactly turn that into a radio play because there isn't...
There's not much there.
There aren't characters. There isn't a rising action. And there isn't a clincher at the end. So I took a Utah ghost tour by Story Tours last Halloween, and...
You went on Halloween?
I did. I did go on Halloween. I rode on a tour bus all around. We passed the Shiloh Inn, which many Utahns are familiar with. We passed the Alta Club, which is reputedly haunted. There were two stories, however, in particular that really grabbed me and seemed like they might be candidates for full-length dramas, and that was the story of John Baptiste, the grave robber, and the story of Lavender, which is a love story. And I was pulled in by Lavender, too, because it has many parallels to classic American ghost tales. Mm. The story of a man who meets a beautiful young lady and is intoxicated by her, gives her his jacket and drops her off, say, at her house, and the next day tries to visit her and finds out where he dropped her off was a cemetery. And there is his coat, folded neatly on the grave. And that story is echoed very strongly in Lavender. And there is also, while Lavender is more legend, I think it's been embellished in the telling and certainly in this telling and exploding it into a 15-minute radio drama.
Like a good ghost story.
Like a good ghost story. There are concrete elements to it. The kissing tree that's mentioned in Lavender really existed in downtown Salt Lake at about 600 East between 3rd and 4th South. There is a marker put up by the Daughters of the Utah Pioneers that can be visited there.
Really?
That's great. There was a gigantic cedar tree there that served as a marker for travelers when they first came to the valley. Unfortunately, it was cut down by vandals, and then the Utah Daughters of Pioneer put up a plaque there. But there is a little gazebo, and there's a plaque there. And Exile has quite a bit of documentation around it. And that's one reason I was attracted to it, too. Plus, the story of a grave robber is creepy in itself. He was robbing graves for 3 years before he was caught, 1859 to 1862, maybe more than 300 graves. When they raided his house, they found piles and piles of clothes that they sewed into rugs that he was wearing himself, that his wife was wearing. They used them for curtains. It's pretty creepy. It's Silence of the Lambs type of stuff.
I want to get Corey in here. Corey, talk a little bit about how you guys need to, now you're transforming, it's a ghost story, right? And you've got to transform it into a piece of radio drama. How were you thinking about that? How did you do it?
Well, one of the things that Matt and I did early on is that he got the ideas for the stories, and he would come over to my place, and I was raised by a blind man, you know, and fantasy and imagination and the radio was my whole life. And so I've got lots and lots of recordings of early 1920s, 30s, and 40s radio, like the old Linnet Bathtub Review. And one of the CDs that was most beneficial was NPR's The Yiddish Radio Project.
Yes.
You know, totally. So Matt and I would sit around, you know, and drink a couple beers and listen to these shows and create what is to become the formula of the Plan B Radio Hour, you know, with sound effects. And then Rick Linnobus, who a lot of you would know, we brought him in to compose music for us.
Absolutely. Okay, so what's the thing that changes it, Corey, just briefly before we go into a break, from story to piece of drama? And it's got to have sound, right?
The sound effects and the Foley effects. You know, and so one of the things I've been very busy doing is creating 45 custom recorded CD cues that happen in under an hour. And not to mention, there's two tables in front of me full of whiz bangs and noisemakers and doors and things that go boom, and training two people to do that for me. Yeah.
And I have to give my hats off to Corey. He really helped fill this story up. As I was writing it, I'm accustomed to writing stage plays, so I would write dialogue and then FX, more dialogue, effects. Yeah, yeah. And he helped it transform the plays from that linear format into a nonlinear format and really create environments and fill it up.
Okay, guys, break a leg. Thanks very much. Matthew Ivan Bennett, resident playwright for Plan B Theater Company. Corey Thorell is Plan B's company manager. He helped create the sound. Today in the program, the Plan B Theater Company is with us live in studio presenting ghost stories from playwright Matthew Ivan Bennett. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90 and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, the Plan B Theater Company is with us, back with us live in studio for our third annual Radio Hour, presenting two original radio plays based on Utah ghost stories written by Plan B's resident playwright Matthew Ivan Bennett. And now, the Plan B Radio Hour.
Welcome to Plan B's Radio Hour, brought to your homes by KUER and Shakey's Ice Cold Crackinated Cola. 4 out of 5 doctors agree, a steady intake of crack strengthens the heart, purifies the liver, and enhances the nerves. Shakey's, getting the shakes never tasted so good.
Shakey's!
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, as always, for inviting us into your living rooms through the magic of radio waves. We have a stupendous program coming up, so keep those dials set to KUER 90.1 FM. But first, allow me a moment to remind you about Plan B's current stage production of Exposed, running down to the Rose Wagner Theater until November 4th. Exposed is a world premiere about Utah's downwinders. Wait, this just in. Exposed is sold out? That's right, sold out. But tickets are still available to Gutenberg the Musical, also at the Rose from November 16th to December 30th. Gutenberg the Musical is a wacky, side-splitting comedy about Bud and Doug, a creative duo who have written an epic musical about the inventor of the printing press. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I am pleased as warm apple pie to introduce the Plan B players.
Woo-hoo!
the sonorous and sparkling Chelsea Starr.
How y'all doing today?
The tell the tale to me trippingly on the tongue, Teresa Sanderson.
Hello, everybody.
The indefatigable and effervescent Foley artist, Mark Fossen.
Hey, hey, hey.
The maven of make-believe audio, the wizard of weird sounds, the stereophonic sensation, Foley artist, Daisy Blake.
Hello, Governor.
And last, but certainly not least talented, myself, the jocular and jingling, the jazzy and jubilant, the jocund, the makes-you-want-to-jump-for-Jesus, the jungle-like...
The juvenile...
Jay Perry! Well, how are you on this fine day, Chelsea?
I'm swell, thanks.
And you, Teresa?
Keen, thank you.
And how are you, Mr. Mark?
Very gay, I appreciate your asking.
Terrific. As I said, ladies and gents...
I'm peachy, thank you.
Super. As I said, you're in for quite a treat as we present two never-heard-before radio dramas based on Utah's ghost stories by Matthew Ivan Bennett. The first, Lavender, is a haunting love story that will tax your reason and twist the cockles of your heart. The second, Exile, is a chilling yarn about a real-life grave robber at the Salt Lake City Cemetery. And stay tuned for intermission to hear a preview of the upcoming radio comedy, Dracula, at the OK Corral. And now, Plan B Theater Company, KUER, and Shakey's ice-cold crackinated cola.
Shakey's!
Present Lavender.
They say you never forget your first love. In my case, that's a double truth. Not because of her haunting beauty, though she was devastating, but because it all happened in one night, the 24th of July, 1860, Pioneer Day, on the night of the biggest dance of the year in the frontier settlement.
Oh, Henry, those shoes couldn't be blacker if you dipped them in tar. You're going to be late.
I want to look handsome, Mother.
Henry, the girls will not be looking at your Sunday shoes.
Where will they be looking?
Well, they look at your manners, Henry.
Oh.
So be at your best and the girls will take to you.
Thank you, Mother.
You're a fine dancer.
Do you think so?
I seen you and I know so. And besides, who taught you?
The dance hall was a dream. White drapes and lanterns everywhere. The room thick with dancers and rose perfume and sweat and gold light. A piano, a fiddler, stern-faced chaperones. And her. A slender purple shadow drifting from boy to boy, leaving them speechless.
Oh, my God.
Just ask her.
I wasn't trying nothing. You could fit a Book of Mormon between us.
That boy's bad.
It smells like a flower bed threw up in here.
Hey, Henry.
Howdy, Warren. Is that kerosene?
Carl darn it, yeah. Can you smell that? I had my jacket hanging on the back of a chair in the sitting room when my little sister comes tearing through and then knocks over a lamp. Believe that? Oh, it's itchy, too. You just get here?
Yep. Did I miss anything?
Nothing much. Couple handkerchiefs fell out of Harriet Henderson's dress when she was twirling.
Really?
Yep. Never been too curvy under the collarbones.
Yoo-hoo, Henry!
Uh-oh. Here comes you-know-who.
Where?
Time for some summer air, I think. She may be a bishop's daughter, but the Lord sure didn't favor that family when it comes to faces. No. Bye.
Oh, no, Warren, don't...
Hello, Henry Tanner.
Oh, Emily, hello.
Catch you after, Henry.
Warren.
Emily.
Do you like my dress?
Yes, it's very yellow. It reminds me of butter.
Thank you. Hey, I waved at you Sunday last, and you did not wave back.
You waved at me?
I was standing in plain sight, Henry Tanner, and you were on your way to the ward house, and I was sitting on my porch.
I remember you were missing from church. Were you sick again?
You know perfectly well I was. My mother told Mrs. Clausen, who told your mother. Oh, it is so weltering in here.
Is it?
Under a dress it is.
I would not know.
Well, I should hope not, silly. Are you going to apologize? At the very least, you can ask me to dance.
You aren't too sweltering?
Oh, good Christmas. You really aren't so dandy, Henry. I would not rebuff me.
Out of pity, I danced with Emily. I danced with a lot of other girls, too, but Emily always required long apologies for any slight, so we danced quite a few. But halfway through a song, I saw her for the first time, wearing a lavender dress and a matching shawl. Lavender. Like the twilight. Like lilacs in the rain. Her hair was auburn, long and wavy. Her eyes were mossy, the bottom of a crystal clear creek bed. From across the room, I felt I was wading in them. And her hands, well, from 30 feet, I knew they let off a heat, touched you like the sun, filled you with carelessness. I was dancing with Emily, but inside I was inches from that strange girl, studying her pale, round face, breathing her lavender blossom breath.
Meow! Watch it, you big Clydesdale! That was my foot!
Hey, Emily, do you know who that girl is?
What girl?
The girl in purple. She's danced every dance.
Never seen her.
Huh.
Why?
I was just wondering who she is. She looks different.
Different? Different in what way?
Not from here.
Meaning?
From somewhere else?
Meaning you think she's exotic.
I suppose.
Oh. You are such a boor, Henry. Dancing with me and calling another girl exotic. I have half a mind to stop helping you socially. Your manners are atrocious.
Fine by me.
Oh, my mother and your mother shall be hearing of this.
My mother did hear of it. But my punishment was light. I was told never to talk to Emily again. Yeah. In retrospect, though, I sometimes wish I had kept dancing with other girls. I wish I hadn't been as drawn to the girl in purple as I was.
Hey, Warren!
Howdy, brother! Woo!
Hey, do you know who that girl is?
What girl?
That girl there.
Her? The one all in purple?
Yeah.
Wow!
I know!
Sweet Peter's fishing pole!
I know!
No handkerchiefs hiding there.
Who is she?
Search me. You gonna ask her to dance? Because if you ain't, I am.
Yes, I'm gonna ask her.
Now?
And as soon as she comes over, hold your horses. The song's about to end.
The chance came when she lingered next to me by the punch bowl. I almost didn't speak. I was so hypnotized by her. She smelled like mountains. Like a juniper berry that's been crushed open. Like rock, wet with rain. And up close, the eyes were even deeper. Looking into them, I was lost in a deep wood. Hello there.
Hello.
Pardon me. Hello there. I've been,
Look at Henry!
I've been, wanting to...
Yes?
Tell you. Your dress is beautiful.
Oh, thank you. It's the only one I've got, really.
Are you new to town?
No. Been about quite a while.
Oh. Well, I haven't seen you at the dances.
I'm at every one.
Huh. Would you like a refreshment? Water? Let me bring it to you. Or take mine, would you?
No, thank you.
Are you all right? Are you sick?
Oh, I'm fine.
I'm sorry.
forgive my forwardness, but you are a... you're... I mean to tell you, lovely.
Thank you.
And I like your laugh and your accent.
I like your way with words.
My name is Henry Tanner.
Lavender.
Lavender? Your name is Lavender?
Yes.
It's pretty.
Thank you.
Would you dance with me, Lavender? Lovely Lavender?
Of course.
We dance till midnight. And what a dancer. What grace. What a smile. Oh, she was quiet but infectious. She danced every dance, never tiring. Every boy watched her. I watched her even as we danced. My eyes drank and drank, but still thirsted. I remember everything. The part in her lips, the goosebumps on her arms later on, the patterns in the thunderclouds. Everything. The way she stood looking at the sky outside of the dance hall when the dance was done. As if she could fly into it.
I wasn't trying nothing.
His manners are atrocious. I'm telling the bishop.
You mean your father?
Not Henry. Go for it.
Happy Pioneer Day, Henry. And thank you for the dance. For all of them.
Thank you.
Good night.
Wait, Lavender, could I offer you a ride home? You shouldn't walk.
And why not? I walk everywhere.
Oh, you look cold. Take my jacket.
I have a shawl.
You're shivering, and there's a breeze. Take my jacket, please. Ride with me. I have a buggy. I'll take you to your doorstep. I want to. I want to be with you as long as I can be. Say yes.
All right.
Can I help you up? Giddy up! I can't stop smiling.
Oh, no?
The way you dance.
What about it?
I don't know. You can just tell that you like doing it, I guess. Most girls, you dance with them, and they're just dancing because you asked them. But you, I mean, you like it. You're not all scared of messing up your hair or a bead of sweat.
Well, I do like to dance.
See, that's great. Maybe different. Everybody around here is so scared of a good time. Lavender?
Hmm?
Would you mind very much if we stopped?
Stopped?
Up ahead at the old... Big cedar tree?
The kissing tree.
Oh, do they call it that? No, I
think you know they call it that. Who doesn't?
I just think it's a neat old tree is all. You know, big cedar branches. Lots of folks meet up there. I mean, it kind of stands out. It's the only cedar tree around. Of course, I'll only stop if you want to stop. If you don't, then... Whoa.
She didn't say anything. She merely nodded and blushed as a light, cold raindrop came down between us. It was the dead of summer, and it was turning chilly. That lone cedar tree swayed seductively in the brewing storm. The faint edge of sulfur hung in the air, blown to us from the Great Salt Lake. The hair on her forearm stood stiff, her teeth clattered. I hoped that it was too dark for her to see that I was watching her mouth.
Ooh, here we are.
Here we are.
Ooh, I am freezing, even having your jacket.
Me too. Yeah, this is strange for July.
It is.
So. Reckon it's gonna rain.
I love the rain.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, I miss it.
Miss it? Oh, you mean living out in the desert?
Yes.
Tell me about Scotland. What's it like?
Oh, much the same, really. Minus the weather. People are people. Are you nervous, Henry?
Oh, me? Heck no. It's just cold.
I'm nervous.
Really?
Yeah. I like you.
Well, I like you too. And I was just about to say it, but you beat me. Shucks, that's what I like about you. You're real upfront. You know, I asked you if you'd like to dance, and you answered me right on the spot. I didn't have to play a game of tag. I asked you if you want to come to the tree, and...
And what?
And maybe I ought to stop prattling on.
Maybe you ought.
I'll stop.
Do what you want.
What I want?
Yes.
All right. Oh.
My, that was...
You have a way with words.
I think I could need another one of those. Oh, well, here it comes. I think I'd better get you home.
She sat nearer to me as we rode on to her house. As the rain fell harder, my nostrils were filled with the scent of her wet auburn hair. I resisted the impulse to hold her hot hand. It would have been too presumptive. We came to a long lane at the end of town. She pointed to a dark house. It looked poor, no camp, candle or lamp inside. She thanked me for a marvelous time, hopped down from the wagon and dashed off into the darkness, turning into a purple blur. It took me hours to fall asleep, and then I dreamed of her. Her on the dance floor, the accent, the dress, the damp kiss under the cedar tree. And when I woke, I was thinking of her. Her laugh, her goosebumps, my jacket all too big on her shoulders.
Well, good morning, son.
Morning, Ma.
I see a smile on somebody's face. How was it?
Oh, the dance? Unforgettable. Did you move my shoes?
Yes, they were wet, Henry. You know better than to leave your wet things on my floor. Why?
I'm going riding.
So early and in your good shoes?
I want to look as nice as last night. I left my jacket with the girl. I'm going to pick it up.
Well, what girl?
Lavender.
Lavender? Lavender who?
I don't know, Mom, but I'm going to find out.
You didn't ask her last name?
Fetching my jacket was an easy excuse to see her again without seeming too bold. And I remembered the way without much trouble. But when I rode up to the lane, I saw things by the daylight that I had missed in the intoxication of our midnight tryst. The house that she had disappeared into only hours before was deserted. The yard was strangled with weeds. Well, this can't be right, I thought. I knew I was on the right street at the right house. So I knocked on a neighbor's door.
I'm coming. What do you want, young man? Tidings?
It isn't Sunday, ma'am.
Well, what do you want?
I'm sorry, but does a beautiful girl live in the house at the end of the lane? See, I was with this girl last night.
Just pack a bone, stop it. There was a young woman did live there.
Did?
Yeah, years ago. You don't seem old enough to have known her.
No, I was with a girl last night.
Why do you ask?
Well, I left her at the end of the lane and she ran into that house.
Oh, couldn't have been that house. It's empty. Family left. Daughter died of pneumonia.
What?
Yeah, winter 49.
Wait, that house there has been empty since 49?
Yep, close to it. They left after she passed. It was a shame, too. She was a real beauty. Heck of a good dancer.
Dancer?
Yeah, only had one dress. Bright purple. Lavender. Wore it all the time. That's how she got her
nickname. Wait. She isn't dead. Pardon me, but you must be confused.
No, couldn't forget about the Watsons. Parents were just torn apart. Everybody was.
The girl I was with, Lavender, she's...
Yeah, Lavender. She's buried up in the city cemetery. East End, under a poplar tree. Just can't miss it.
I was speechless. It felt as if my brain had been flushed with ice water. I ran from the neighbor's porch without reply. I rode to the far east end of the Salt Lake City Cemetery, reviewing every moment from the night before. I had touched her, smelled her, danced with her. Warren saw her. Emily saw her. The kiss. Her lips. I went mad. Had I been dreaming? My mother said that my shoes were wet. They were wet because I had been in the rain. No, I wasn't dreaming it. Well, I ran from my horse, found the poplar tree, found the headstone, Marilyn Watson, and below, the nickname, Lavender. The date of birth and the day she died, 11 years earlier, 1849. 2 years after the pioneers arrived in the valley. But it wasn't the name or the dates that irked me most. It was my jacket. It laid there, folded carefully on the grave, smelling of of summer rain, and of her. For weeks, it was all I could think of. I avoided my mother's questions, Warren's questions. It was years before I told a soul. Where the dance hall was, the trolley car company would later build. My grandchildren would ride in the red steel cars all day long for a nickel. And every time I felt one of them rumble by, I would think of that Pioneer Day dance. I would smell the gunpowder from the fireworks. I did find love again, after a long time. But every year, I would visit her grave. They say, you never forget your first love.
You're listening to Radio West on FM 90 and XM Public Radio. Today it's our third annual Radio Hour with the Plan B Theater Company. More radio drama when we come back from a break. Stay with us. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, it's our third annual Radio Hour with the Plan B Theater Company. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to our studio, ladies and gentlemen. Wasn't that lavender wonderful? It warms and chills at the same time. Moving on now, please enjoy this brief commercial break by the Plan B Players and a preview of Dracula at the OK Corral. And now.
In a different time. In a different world.
All right, give me 3 torches, 10 of them wooden stakes, a box of silver specials, and, some of your holy water, the 8-ounce bottles.
Right away, Mr. Earp. Will that be paper or burlap?
One man.
Burlap.
In a fight against evil.
I'm Dracula.
Oh, bats!
You're who?
Dracula.
I didn't catch that.
Dracula?
Are you saying spatula?
In a race against time.
Yeah.
One man risks everything.
I love you, Mina, and don't you ever forget that.
In these past 3 minutes, Wyatt Earp, you have taught me the very meaning of love.
To restore the balance of all existence in all dimensions in the universe.
Oh!
You like that, spatula? 'Cause there's 5 more where that come from. Uh-oh.
I'm a vampire, you goatish varlet. You can't gun kill me.
Next Halloween.
Who are you calling goatish, you clap-ridden footlicker?
From the theater company that brought you Facing East and Exposed.
Vampires can't get the clap.
They can't?
No.
Oh, well, you're still a footlicker.
Comes a radio play that will redefine the genre of spaghetti western / horror / shtick comedy radio plays.
It's raining men. Hallelujah, it's raining.
Mister!
Yes, Renfield, what you want?
I heard you shouting from the coffin. What were you doing, Master?
Nothing.
Dracula at the OK Corral. Coming soon.
Zowie! How can you go wrong with cowboys and vampires? Keep your ears pricked, my friends. Dracula at the OK Corral is coming soon. And now, the second half of our program, a story of deep depravity, of graveyards, of a specter scene in this very valley. The Plan B Players, KUER, and Shakey's.
Shakey's!
Give you exile.
God, this lake stinks.
I know, it's the brine shrimp.
It's like a sewer with sand. Who told you it was awesome out here?
Sarah.
Yeah, figures. Sarah can't smell anything with her new and improved nose. You want to go back? It's getting dark.
Whoa, look at that wacko. What is he doing?
Where? What are you talking about?
That guy. Is he carrying clothes?
What guy?
Down the beach. A guy with a big wet bundle of clothes. You don't see him?
Pretty sure I don't see anything.
He's gone.
Are you okay?
He's gone.
The story of John Baptiste, the exile, is bound to the shores of the Great Salt Lake. It's said he was branded on the forehead and left on Fremont Island for his crimes. Public record says nothing of it, but the story lives in the journal of Wilford Woodruff.
Damnable, diabolical, satanical, hellish sacrileges!
In the testimonies of policeman and judge.
Imagine our shock and our surprise. In my breast wrinkled the unconquerable determination to kill him there and then, should my suspicions be confirmed.
But most importantly, perhaps, the story lives in Baptiste's specter, seen along the lake.
Down the beach. The guy with the big wet bundle of clothes. You don't see him?
Yes. The story of John Baptiste, a story of depravity, of banishment, and of the dead, is bound to the shores of the Great Salt Lake. It begins, however, with the slicing sound of a shovel in the winter of 1862. The sky was a gray haze, the sun invisible behind it. The wind was sharp. Mr. George Clausen compulsively smoothed his sandy-colored hair, hovering by the grave, livid and impatient as the coffin was dug up. His yellow teeth clattered and a vein throbbed in his left temple, the breath condensed in huffs of pompous irritation.
Could we do this with haste, please? The cold is stabbing.
Sorry, Mr. Clausen, the ground's frozen solid.
Inside the coffin was Moroni Clausen, George's brother. A week earlier, he'd been arrested by Orrin Porter Rockwell and was shot by police after attempting an escape. Despite his falling in with outlaws, however, his family wanted him in the family plot, not in a pine box in Salt Lake City.
Here he is, sir. Almost finished.
I would like to see him, Mr. Little.
You don't want to do that, sir. Best to think of him as he...
Show me!
Mr. Clausen knew his brother had been wrong in joining the attack on the territorial governor. Even if Governor Dawson was a lecher and a jackass sent only to tax the Mormons for a war in the South, he had been wrong. But did he deserve to be shot in the street for it, even if he ran?
Prepare yourself, sir.
Mr. Clausen steadied himself and stepped closer, gaping down into the casket.
Oh, Lord!
Oh, my, that isn't the...
This is how my brother is buried?
No, sir. No, he was...
Naked? Face down?
He was clothed, sir. Mr. Heath, the policeman, bought him clothes.
Thrown in?
I don't understand it, sir.
That's a terrible thing to do, to bury a man like that.
Afternoon, Mr. Little.
Officer Heath.
I suppose you know why I'm calling.
Yeah, suppose I do. Excuse us, Miss Penny.
I can finish up later, sir.
Henry Heath, a barrel-chested man with a neat reddish beard, surveyed Mr. Little's home. Scriptures sat open on a table by the fire. The walls were bare except for a sepia photograph of a staring, wrinkled woman. It smelled of bacon grease. Heath turned to the round, balding Mr. Little. Was this the home of a pervert and a grave robber?
The Clausen family is mighty upset, Mr. Little.
Yeah, I reckon they would be.
And I'm starting an investigation on Judge Smith's permission.
Yeah, I heard.
Now, grave robbing is a felony, Mr. Little, and wicked in the eyes of God.
And I don't know a thing about it. We dressed the Clausen boy in the clothes you were kind enough to provide, Mr.
You don't know anything.
And I swear it on the book, I wouldn't bury a devil like that, and I won't disturb no grave. The job of sexton's a sacred responsibility. Don't think I don't know that.
Well, I'm gonna have to talk to your staff. Who you got digging for you?
Mr. Little gave a name.
John Baptiste lives about K Street.
It was the only name he needed to give. En route to the Baptiste home, Henry Heath thought of his hazel-eyed daughter. He thought of the dandelion bouquets she pushed against his sleeping nose, giggling as he woke with a start.
He thought of her playing dolls by the oven because she loved the smell of warm bread. Then he thought of her, like Moroni Clausen, lying in a crooked nude heap, her bones poking through her gray flesh as maggots fed. His daughter, too, had been buried in the Salt Lake Cemetery. His hands tightened against the reins.
Whoa.
Heath wasn't certain that Mr. Little, the sexton, was blameless. But he was certain that whoever was to blame would feel his fist.
Hello?
Howdy, ma'am. I'm Officer Heath, investigating a matter up at the city cemetery. Are you Mrs. Baptiste, wife of John?
I am.
Good. Can I come in?
What's the matter?
It's about an investigation, ma'am.
An investigation of what?
Ma'am, it's a bitter day today. Can I just come in?
Well, all right.
Henry Heath could see his exhalations inside the house. He noticed that Mrs. Baptiste's chapped, bony hands were trembling. She looked unkempt. Her hair was pulled back into a bun, but several wiry hairs had escaped and curled like dead spider legs over her forehead. Her pointed face was pasty, and her eyes were sunken. Her thin lips were perfectly horizontal, not smiling or frowning, but seemed strained. She wore a tattered dress that was markedly out of style.
No fire?
I'm afraid I let it die.
You run out of wood?
Yes.
Henry looked around. There was a large pile of kindling in the corner, covered by a green wool blanket, but he said nothing. The atmosphere of their home unnerved him. It felt as if he were standing in dog's breath, and he suddenly had a headache. He was certain he could smell a bedpan from the back room.
What's the nature of this investigation, Mr.
Heath?
Right. Heath, what is it concerning?
Henry noticed boxes, boxes along every wall, boxes stacked one on top of another, full of clothing, much of it white.
Huh.
Mr. Heath?
He heard a low gurgling. He couldn't tell from where.
Mr. Heath, would you please explain? Mr. Heath, would you please explain?
What's that sound?
Sound?
Whose clothes are these?
Oh, they're ours. Those old things.
Yeah, who do they belong to?
They're ours. Excuse me.
The Baptiste home had looked unassuming from outside, but inside Henry found it was anything but. In the windows, there were curtains stitched from dresses and shirts. There were rugs, furniture covers, blankets, all sewn from clothes.
Are you cooking something, ma'am?
No, why?
Now tell me what that sound is, ma'am.
She was quiet, a knot in her pale throat. Then Henry saw the door to the cellar.
What's down there? Ma'am, I'm gonna have a look-see downstairs.
No, right? It's nothing unusual. It's just, you don't need to, really.
The air grew humid and warm as Henry descended the stairs, Mrs. Baptiste fidgeting tensely behind him. At the bottom, candlelight revealed a large cast-iron vat. In it were boiling clothes.
They're ours. My husband and
I... Your husband what, ma'am?
Funeral robes hung drip-drying on a line nearby. One of them was small, girl-sized. There was rage in his heart.
Let's go, girl. Yeah!
Henry Heath had searched the small house. There was jewelry, earrings, lockets, wedding bands. There were 60 pairs of children's shoes. The firewood upstairs was pieces of coffin. But it was the tiny white robe that dominated the thoughts of Henry Heath as he rode for the cemetery. The frosted grass crunched under Heath's boots as he strode across the graveyard. He discovered Baptiste while digging. He was gangly but tall, bent over like a light pole. He had hollow cheeks and his small ears stuck out from his peppery hair. His lips were drawn strangely inward. From a distance, Baptiste's eyes flickered on the approaching policemen. He thought for a moment that they were reflective, like a dog's.
Are you John Baptiste?
The same.
I ought to kill you!
What?
How many of you robbed?
What? Robbed? No, I would
not. Liar! We found the clothes. How many?
Like I said!
This one, did you rob that grave?
Mister, please, I'm telling you.
Did you? Don't you lie, you wretch. You'll be begging if you do. This one, did you rob it?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Stand up.
I'm sorry.
I said stand up and walk.
Don't point that gun at me!
I'll do more than point, Mr. Baptiste. You don't stand up!
I have rights!
Walk! That way.
All right.
Now, You're going to be true with me, Mr. Baptiste, when I ask you. If you stutter, if you hesitate, I swear to Jesus I will pull this trigger.
Please don't.
Keep walking.
I'm sorry, I couldn't stop.
This one. Did you rob that grave?
Which one?
This one, yes or no?
No, not that one.
My daughter's grave, buried in a white robe, yes or no?
No, I swear I never touched it. Please don't.
Henry Heath would later say that that answer saved the miserable coward's life. It did not, however, save him from hearing a city's anger outside the jail.
String him up!
Jail's too good for the likes of him!
Justice! He dug up my child! That man should be burned! Burn him! Burn him!
The story of John Baptiste is bound to the shores of the Great Salt Lake. Baptiste hadn't committed a capital crime, so he couldn't legally be killed. So to pacify the public, it was suggested by Brigham Young that Baptiste be exiled.
I would make him a fugitive and a vagabond upon the earth. That would be my sentence.
The idea gained momentum. Baptiste was branded on the forehead with indelible ink, a tattoo reading, "Branded for robbing the dead."
He should have been buried!
While secreted away by police to Fremont Island, the personal effects he had stolen were gathered at the courthouse for families to pick through. Processions of sobbing fathers and mothers would handle the lace clothing and the treasures that he had stripped from the bodies for over 3 years. With a sickening dread, the recognized objects were reclaimed, and a second bereavement began for lost men, lost wives and children, infants. Mrs. Baptiste became a pariah, though no charges were brought against her.
Get out.
Please don't.
The island was deserted except for cattle and a shack stocked with provisions for the herders.
You're gonna die out here, Mr. Baptiste.
Whether he did die there or not is unknown. A few months later, the shack was discovered to be torn down, and John Baptiste was gone.
Whoa, look at that wacko. What is he doing?
Where?
That guy.
What are you talking about?
Is he carrying clothes?
What guy?
Down the beach. Guy with the big wet bundle of clothes. You don't see him?
Yes, his body disappeared from that island on the lake. But a century and a half later, he is still seen on the shore.
Welcome back for the last time, listeners. If your imagination is anything like mine, the story of John Baptiste will stay with you. And if any moral is to be extracted from it, boy, it's this. Choose cremation. Nobody robs an urn. Once again, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning into our program. The Plan B players will return to the airwaves sooner than you think. I'd like to thank our sponsors at KUER and at the Pig Latin Preservation Society. Ikiringse AA Unierfe Yutcherfe. And to the folks at
Big Bertha's.
We appreciate your big support.
Big Bertha's.
Buns.
Are made with 100% real lard.
Big Bertha's.
Mm-mm, good.
Well, that does it for today, people. This has been another installment of Plan B's Radio Hour. For past shows, log on to planbtheater.org. And stay tuned next time for Dracula at the OK Corral. This is Jay Perry.
Chelsea Starr.
Mark Foster.
Teresa Sanderson.
Daisy Blake.
And Doug Fabrizio.
Wishing you a horrifying Halloween. Don't drink too much of that wassail, and if you do, get a friend to fly your broom. This is Plan B Theater Company bidding you so long.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Lavender and Exile were written by Plan B Theater Company's resident playwright Matthew Ivan Bennett. Cheryl Ann Clough is Plan B Theater Company's managing director and the director of today's performance. Sound and Foley design was created by Corey Thorell. Original music was written by Ricklin Nobis, mixed by David Evanoff. Natalie Reed played the solo violin, and you heard Kurt Bester on harmonica. Our sound engineer for today's production was Michael Havey, with additional operation by Jerry Rapier. Our thanks to Carly Reynolds. Radio West is produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.
Symphonies make you snooze,
or the jazz you think might lose.
Do not abdicate your glee.
There's always theater at hand.
Would you sooner walk to Jupiter than see a musical stupider than Beavis and Butthead's MTV?
You have a choice. Come see Plan B.
Our actors say the F word instead of frick
or darn or turd.
We pride ourselves on speech that's free here at the theater called Plan B.
Within our theater's lovely walls, you'll never smell or gag on mothballs.
The work we stage is topically
the best in Utah. See Plan B. If CSI Miami's bore you out of your jammies, forego that Hollywood killing spree.
Chill out, my friends, you've got Plan B.
Our theater is political, addressing issues critical.
We never cater to bourgeoisie.
Here in the halls of good Plan B.
We thank you all for listening to our lyrics glistening.
And please remember our tuneful plea.
If Plan A fails,
there's always Plan B.
Bum, bum.